CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 127, a special episode, Ask Me Anything. Let's go through your questions that you want to ask me. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm here in the office, as you can tell, by the same background you've always seen on Cataract Coach. And I asked the audience, you guys, my fellow ophthalmologists, do you have any questions for me? What do you want to ask me? And I received more than 100 replies. So I've got all the questions here on my laptop, and we kind of go through some of them. And it's going to be a long session. It's a podcast, obviously. I bet you'll exceed an hour. And we're going to talk about all the things that I was asked. Now, the questions were from a variety of topics. A lot were about learning and cataract surgery training and getting back to surgery and what if you have a problem and how do you learn new techniques? That's one thing. Another was complications in surgery. How do you manage certain complications? How do you deal with them? How do you get back on the horse once you've fallen off, right? When you have that complication, how do you change your mindset to get back into it? I had a bunch of questions about refractive questions. IOL calcs, how do you assess this, aim for this, calculate this? We'll go through all that too. There were questions about surgery in the operating room. And we can go through all those as well, various clinical scenarios, and I'm happy to share all my expertise with you. There were questions then about the future and AI, artificial intelligence, and robots, and what's going to come in the future of ophthalmology. We can go through that. There were philosophical questions, which I actually enjoyed the most. Maybe we'll even start with those. And then finally, there were miscellaneous or personal questions about me and asking me about my own personal life and this and maybe my bench press stuff, whatever it is. But we're going to go through everything. You know what? Probably the most engaging would be to talk about the philosophical questions first. And so the philosophical questions I thought were very interesting. One was, who is your number one mentor in your career as an ophthalmologist? And while I had many mentors, many people taught me, and I've been a good student, I'm happy to learn from so many people. I had great people in my medical school, in my residency, in my training. They're all good people. And they taught me a lot, and I'm very thankful. But there's one surgeon who never once spent time within the operating room, but taught me more than every other surgeon. And that has to be Dr. Robert Osher. Now, we had a revise of his podcast last weekend, a revisit. He is such an incredible man. You know, if you're not familiar, Bob Osher started the Vitreo Journal of Cataract Surgery decades ago, like 40 years ago. And given the limitations of the time, which is low-def video, and VHS tapes, like videotape, like before DVDs, he would put together every quarter a videotape to teach the best surgical techniques in cataract surgery and all of ophthalmology, anterior segment surgery. And he's continued that in perpetuity. I mean, for 40 years. He's truly incredible. And he is like, I consider him the godfather of ophthalmic surgical video. And he has taught me more than anyone else in ophthalmology. And again, it's not just surgical technique. He's never been within the operating room. Same way I've taught you and I've never been in the operating room with you. But what he taught me was just truly valuable, and including probably the most important thing, which is continue evolving and continue learning the rest of your life. So that's an easy one. People have not asked me, okay, what's my biggest regret in life? That's an interesting one. And I'll give you a couple stories here. Now, in my own life, I think my biggest regret so far is that I've worked too hard and neglected other aspects of my life. And I'm trying to be better. You know, my father died last year. A great guy. He did a lot of amazing things in his life. And he said he only had one regret in his life. And that one regret, he said, was that he wasted his 50s and 60s working his fingers to the bone. For what? So he says, so he can die with a bank account that has a little bit extra money? Who cares? He says he's got successful kids who don't need any money. And in that regard, my parents have left me exactly zero. And that's okay, because I don't need that. I have more important things in life. But I think that's probably the most important thing. And so to realize, you know, there's a saying, all people have two lives. And the second life begins the moment you realize that you have just one life. And when you're in your, like, 30s and 40s, you kind of think you're going to live forever. And to be frank, 30s and 40s are super stressful. There was so much more stress in my 40s, even 30s, than there is now in my 50s. 50s are much easier. Oh my gosh. In your 30s and 40s, you've got the new job, the new career. You've got your spouse. You've got these young kids at home, and the kids are in school, and the school projects, and the amount of stress. You bought a new house. You can barely afford it, and your bills. And it's so stressful. But I tell you, you hit 50, and you realize a couple of things, which is like, number one, my kids are like grown up and gone, and they have their own lives. And they'll be okay. And the same way that my parents may have worried about me when I was, you know, 18, 20 years old going off to university, and maybe I worry about my kids the same way, and they'll be fine. I assure you they'll be fine. But when you hit 50, you're like, okay, I really have a lot more ability to enjoy life. It's a little bit less stressful. In fact, if you look at data, Google this if you want, the least happy time in most people's lives is their 40s. I'm just like, I get it now. But at 50, the one realization really is, it's the most important lesson you learn in your life. And that most important lesson is, when you hit 50, you say, no matter what, I'm on the second half of life. Like when you're 45, you kind of lie to yourself and say, oh, well, listen, I'm still in the first half of life. I'm 45. You know what? I'll be able to live till I'm 98, and that's okay. I'm still first half. But when you hit 50, you're like, let's be honest here. I'm an ophthalmologist. I do cataract surgery. How many 100-year-old patients do I actually see? No, it's pretty rare. When I see a 100-year-old patient in my clinic, it's a rare thing. And I think the math will show that maybe 1%, maybe 2% of people actually live to be 100. So when you hit 50, 50, you realize I'm definitely on the second half of life. In the golf course of life, if you will, I'm definitely on the back nine. Hopefully I'm on hole 9 or 10 when you hit age 50. And you're not on hole, like, you know, 18. So that's kind of an important thing. Another question was asked to me, he's like, what's your biggest fear in life? My biggest fear is that you never know when the end is here. Just this last week, I had a patient who was born the same year as me. And I did cataract surgery for him, and I just learned last week that he passed away of an aggressive astrocytoma. He's literally my age. He's like a month or two older than me. And it just like, wow, hit home that like, really, time is my most valuable asset. It really is. Let me focus the rest of my life, because what's behind me is already done and I can't do it again. Maybe I can part this knowledge to you and you can, you know, appreciate this. Let me just focus on enjoying whatever time I've got left, and let me pursue happiness. And the rest of this stuff is probably not all that important. You know, think about it. Other philosophical questions. What is something you wish people would notice more about you? Well, probably that I'm just a regular person. I'm so not perfect. I have faults. I'm human. Anytime I want to be humbled, I'll talk to my kids. And my daughter will remind me, Dad, you're nothing. And so that just kind of resets things. And remember, this is normal for 20-something-year-old kids. I mean, I probably did the same thing to my parents. And so I'm human. I have faults. I'm not perfect. Everyone, including me, including you, is fighting some sort of battle that you don't realize. Like when I talk to a patient, you don't realize, like, they've got other things going on in their lives. They're fighting their own battles. And you have to get better at kind of reading patients. I had a patient recently where you certainly have some posterior subcapsular cataracts, your vision's like 20/40, 20/50, but you know, with some glare, 20/100, and I get it. And the patient, I asked the patient, you know, what do you think? How's your vision? And the patient's like, listen, my vision's not great, but I've got so many other pressing things in my life right now. And they kind of left it kind of broad-ended and kind of vague like that. I said, okay. I said, listen, there's no rush to do anything. I said, why don't you deal with your own other issues right now? Because those are more pressing. And when you just, your vision's to the point where you just can't stand it anymore, I'll fix it for you. We'll do a good job. We'll do a beautiful job. And I just didn't realize what else is going on in this kid, this patient's life. And the reality was, this patient is a child who's like battling leukemia or lymphoma or something bad, and that's where all their energy is going. And you know what? Handle that first. That's so much more important. So, you know, it's a crazy philosophical thing that I just kind of never thought of when I was younger. If you'd explained these things to me when I was 30, it may have fallen on deaf ears. That's why I'm hoping the young ophthalmologists who hear our podcast, who are in their 30s, in their 40s, will say, that's a pretty good point. Now, sticking with our philosophical questions here, the other one was, if you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be? Well, other than the obvious of, I always wished I could be 6'4". Or let's say 190 centimeters tall. Besides that, I'm just an average guy. But I wish I could be kinder to myself. A little bit less strict. I'm a little too focused, a little too intense, a little too hardcore. And maybe it's okay not to work so hard. And so you look at things like, oh, cataractcoach.com. Of course there's a new cataract coach video every day. We're on video 2,600, whatever it is. You know, but I've never missed a day. I made a new video every day for 2,600 something days in a row. I think this video is going to be 2,673. So just think about that. It's like, that's a fine line between like passionate and brilliant and a little bit crazy. There's a fine line in there. But why do I do it? Well, we'll get into that later. And so finally, in fact, getting into that, the question was, what is my biggest dream in life? And my biggest dream is, can one person democratize or equalize surgical education worldwide? Because the truth of the matter is, you can train in some places, like where I trained, where the training was amazing. So much hands-on, so much didactic, so much learning. Great. You could be in any other corner of the world, and maybe the training is not as good. Maybe you completed this training, and you didn't get much hands-on. There are countries in Europe, fancy countries, and those countries who make really fancy cars, cars that I like, may not always teach their young doctors how to do surgery. So can I equalize or democratize that surgical education worldwide? And the answer is yes. Like, as long as I'm alive, there will be no secrets in ophthalmic surgery. I will teach everything. Now, if you've seen the cataract coach videos, you see, I spill the beans. I teach you everything. I will tell you every single secret. I will equalize the absolute playing field. I want it based on merit. If you're super hardworking and super driven, you'll be the best worldwide. I won't gatekeep or hide that information from you, which is the norm. The normal situation in ophthalmology is, oh, those who have the knowledge about ophthalmic surgery hide it, put it behind a paywall, they gatekeep it, and they don't teach the world. No, no, no. This is why cataract coach has grown so much. Because I teach everything, and I do it for free. All right, those are probably the big philosophical questions. There's some miscellaneous and personal questions. We'll probably get to the end. Let's go through learning and training. So here are the questions that I kind of grouped together about learning and training, getting back to surgery. Let's go through them. Now, first question is, I want to know your system to train young ophthalmologists. When do you let them have all the steps? When can they manage complications? Well, like anything in life, it's kind of a stepwise approach. You start with the basics. Now, a good resident, and I taught residents for 22 years at UCLA, and I was the most awarded professor in the history of that department in terms of teaching awards. In fact, they're right above me here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 of those crystal apples. No other faculty members even won 2 or 3 of them. I got 5. So I really am passionate about this topic. So when do you let them learn? Well, they've got to do stepwise. The first thing is first is learn little things. So I would have a PGY1 resident, first year, you're an intern, come up to the operating room and let me teach you how to do retrobulbar block. So the PGY4 resident, the senior resident doing the surgery, the cataract surgery, with a block, retrobulbar block, well, let me teach you how to do the block. So I'll page you, come to the operating room, do the block, and then go back to the clinic. So you learn something. When you're a first year resident, you gotta make sure you learn something every single day. Use your hands every day. So every day in the clinic, well, what procedure are you gonna do today? Are you gonna do a YAG capsulotomy? You're gonna go to the operating room, do retrobulbar block? You're gonna do some PRP, panoramic photo coagulation? You're gonna do some intravenous injections? Okay, none of the above? At least put the gonioprism on the eye and look at the angle. At least do a proper scleral depressed exam and look at the retinal periphery. Your patients deserve that. In fact, if you're a good fan of cataract coach, you saw just a week ago or 2 weeks ago on retinarounds.com, our sister channel, there's a video of me as the patient getting a depressed scleral exam. So examining my retinal periphery by depressing my sclera, and that was done by our host on Retina Rounds, Priti Prasad. Dr. Prasad did a beautiful job, obviously, examining me. We made a video about it, so you can learn exactly the technique how to do this. So you gotta work with your hands. You gotta know these things. So, next question is, so yeah, we advance residents step by step. You learn the basic things, you move up. Okay, maybe then you can start to make an incision. Or probably an easier way is back end into the cases. Meaning, okay, the case is done, everything looks great, why don't you put a suture in the incision? All right, it's a pretty good idea. Can you suture with tenor nylon? Now, a good resident, and you can measure yourself by this metric, can do what I call the cataract coach 10-10-10. Can you do 10 sutures of tenor nylon in 10 minutes? In the wet lab, on a grape, on a tomato, just do it. Now, no one is born knowing this skill. I've met 0 people in my life who could just never operate before, never be in a wet lab, and all of a sudden do the 10-10-10. No one. So obviously you have to put effort in. The question is, will you actually put the effort in? And that, to be frank, it's 20-25% of residents. The majority of residents I've trained in 22 years at a fantastic program called UCLA, the Jules Stein Eye Institute, the majority just don't want to put the effort in. And this is basically confirming the Pareto principle, right? P-A-R-E-T-O, meaning it's the 80-20 rule. 20% of surgeons do 80% of surgery. It's true. 20% of the residents are going to be successful in the future, and 80% will be okay. But 20% will be really successful because they put in the effort. So you're listening to this video, if you're watching this, hearing my podcast about the Ask Me Anything, you're the type who's going to put in the effort. Don't chicken out on that. Put in the effort. Be you the best you can be. And then you advance the training. So once you back into the surgery, okay, you do the suture at the end of the case. Now, you know what? The senior resident can do the whole case, and then now at the end of the case, the eye is full of viscoelastic, the eye was in the bag. You can put the IA probe in, aspirate at the viscoelastic, you seal the incisions, you put the suture. Okay, good. Now the next time, do one more step backwards. Maybe this time, you could put the IO on the eye. And then the next day, change. Maybe the next time, you could fill the bag with viscoelastic, then put the IO, then aspirate the viscoelastic, then you can put the suture in. And so, maybe the next case, you can do the cortex removal. So that's the kind of the easy way of doing it, is kind of backing into the case. But again, it takes time and effort. And it takes time in with you in the operating room, but also you in the wet lab. Put in the effort. You can do it. Now, our next question. How do you overcome the fear of learning and using a new technique after residency, and there's no one there to guide you? That's a great question. You know, one of the biggest changes in your career. If you're a resident right now, you think, oh my gosh, residency is so hard. I assure you, it's a walk in the park. When you look back, if you're an American like me, and you look back at 11th grade in the USA, age 16, you're taking all these advanced placement courses, these honors courses, and it's so stressful. You're studying for the SAT exam. You're doing your extracurricular. It's, oh God, life is so hard. And you think, gosh, 11th grade is the hardest thing ever. But now you look back, when you're in your 30s, you say, gosh, 11th grade was a joke. It was a walk in the park. I could do it now in my sleep. That's the way that I look at residency. So just keep that in mind. So you will be come to a point where you'll finish your training and you'll be in practice and you'll be 30-something years old, a young doctor, no gray hair like me, and you'll do a complex surgery and there's an issue. And you look to your left, and you look to your right, and there's no one there. It's just you. No one will help you. No one will bail you out. It's all on your shoulders. So it's a lot more pressure. You are right. Well, how do you learn new techniques? Well, the first thing you do is you study surgical video. It's why we make Cataract Coach. If you watched 5 years ago or 8 years ago, whatever it was, you saw that I taught myself how to do DMEC corneal lamellar transplantation. No one taught me in person, but I watched videos from amazing surgeons. Martin Dirsamer, oh my God, what a genius. Peter Veldman in Chicago, oh my God, another amazing surgeon. And they sent me videos of doing DMEC and showed me kind of the tricks, the tips and tricks, like here are the secrets to do it. Oh, I put it together in a video. I watched the video dozens of times. And then I went to the operating room. Let me learn how to do it. You're going to have to do that. If you can't teach yourself, you're going to be in trouble. Let me tell you very frankly. The way you do surgery today is not the way you're going to do it in 10 years. There's no chance. It's going to change. And if you don't learn that, you're going to be in trouble. Take it from an old guy like me. I finished my residency training 25 years ago in the year 2000. And you know what happened then? In the year 2000, there was no femtosecond laser. There was no CT machine. There was no anti-VEGF treatments. I mean, as crazy as it sounds. There was no lamellar corneal transplantation. There were no phaking lenses. These things didn't exist. We didn't have EDOF lenses even. All these things I've taught myself over the last 25 years. And you have to be able to teach yourself. Because I promise what you do in the future is not going to be what you do today. If you say, I'll finish my training today, and what I learned today, I'll do it for the next few decades of my career for 40 years. That's like that weird old guy in the community who only does extra caps or cataract surgery because he never learned phaco. You and I both know that's really crazy. That doesn't make sense. So don't let that be you. You've got to keep learning every year, in fact, every day, the rest of your life. That's why I'm a cataract coach. Cataract coach, the sole purpose is to make you a better surgeon. Now, by the way, we should talk about the podcast, the Cataract Coach podcast. It's the top podcast in all of ophthalmology. In fact, this is a podcast episode. So if you're listening to this, and this is episode 127. You've missed out on 126 episodes that could have taught you so much. Do you know the sole purpose, one purpose of the Cataract Coach podcast is to make you more successful in your career as an ophthalmologist? That's it. I mean, I'm literally giving you the secrets. I interview other ophthalmologists. We have a discussion. Every podcast is about an hour long, and it reveals the secrets to success. I mean, if you aren't listening to it already, oh my God, what a disservice. What are you doing? How do you not care about your career? I'm literally giving you the secrets. If you don't listen to it now, a few years from now, you'll come back and say, oh my gosh, I should have listened. All the secrets are there. I learned the hard way. I failed. I struggled so much. I could have just listened to the podcast. I know. And it's free. That's the crazy part. So you got to listen to the podcast. Let's go through this again. It's the new techniques we talked about. Looking back on your own training, which single bad habit in cataract surgery took you the longest to unlearn? And what advice would you give a trainer today to avoid making that mistake? Probably the biggest thing is relying too much on one teacher. Every surgeon has their own kind of way of doing it. And that's okay. But there are kind of many ways of doing it. So you don't want to just be falling into the trap of copying one surgeon exclusively. You want to learn from many surgeons. And I think that's probably the best. And then after you learn from many surgeons, you can amalgamate all of those together in a technique that works for you. And then even in the future, you can innovate your own techniques. But don't be super reliant on just one surgeon to teach you everything. And that's why in Cataract Coach, I could put every video every week only for me operating. But I don't do that. And most I feature one video, sometimes zero videos a week of me operating. And it's other surgeons, because that's how we learn the most. Do you offer a fellowship? Can I come learn from you? So thank you for asking. I do not offer a fellowship. If you want to learn from me, it's called cataractcoach.com. It's free. Now, I know most of you are YouTube subscribers and watch me on YouTube or maybe on Instagram. But actually, if you go to the website, cataractcoach.com, and sign up for the daily email, which is free, that actually gives you more information than just the video. And it's sent every day to your inbox. We send the videos out every day at 5 a.m. East Coast USA time, which is 2 a.m. West Coast USA time. I choose that because my number one market of all listeners and viewers is USA. Two is India, three is Brazil, and I think rounding out the top would be also like UK and some other markets. But because of that, I want the USA doctors to have my video that day in their inbox when they wake up. So 5 a.m. East Coast time, it should be boom, ready and available. So if you wake up early and you're having your morning coffee, you're commuting to work, you can, hey, spend a couple minutes and watch the video for the day. And then therefore it comes out at 2 a.m. California time or West Coast time, and then wherever else it is, whatever time on the rest of the planet. But that's why we do it that way. But yeah, the best way is to learn from your cataract coach. Do you know on the cataractcoach.com website, I have a free PDF book about cataract surgery? You don't have to register. You don't have to give me your name. I don't need your email. Just have it. Just have it. It's free. It's just a PDF file. As you know, the days of having books about cataract surgery are kind of limited because there's no videos involved. You learn by video, not by books. But my book is now a PDF file, and it's brief. It's like 60, 70, 80 pages. Just download it. You can put it on your phone, your iPad, your laptop, email it to your friend. It's free. Just have it. Give it to your friends. There's so much to learn. And then I also have a 25-part curriculum series. I got a video about everything about ophthalmology and cataract surgery. How to learn patient selection. What about anesthesia? What about retrobulbar, peribulbar, subtina? It's all covered. What about, I have a question about how about ergonomics and how do you set this up and the microscope and the foot pedals. It's all there. It's free. So look at those resources on cataractcoach.com, not YouTube, before you email me. How do I send you a video for cataractcoach.com? Well, I love to receive your video. We receive 50 to 60 videos from viewers every week. And I download all of them and I watch all of them. And that's very important to me. And I choose the best of them. Now, if you go to cataractcoach.com, go to the website on YouTube, cataractcoach.com, there's a link that says submit your videos here. And it gives you very specific instructions about the bare minimum requirements and how to send your video in. Please follow the directions. Every week, at least half the videos that send to me don't follow the directions. And that's why I'm so good with the delete button. Come on now, do better. You can do better than this. And if you send me a video of a complication, it's far more likely to be featured than a routine case. And the worst of all is if you send me a video of like, look how good I am. I did the cataract in 3 minutes. And I watch the video and I think, oh my gosh, please never do that to my eye. I don't want that. For my eye, spend an extra 2 minutes and make it beautiful, will you? So, again, it's all on the cataractcoach.com site. So no, I don't offer a fellowship. Can you come learn from me in person? I'm happy to meet anyone. But remember, I have a crazy travel schedule, which we'll talk about later. And because I don't have a very predictable schedule. And if you come and visit me in my operating room or my surgery center, I'm happy to have people come visit. What will you see? You can't scrub in. You can't do part of the case. You can't look through the microscope because you have to be scrubbed in. You're going to watch cataract TV screen in my operating room? Why don't you just watch on your phone? It's the same video. So think about that. All right, let's go through some more here. So that's about learning, training, getting back to surgery. We talked about that. Some people ask, for getting back to surgery, someone says, I learned surgery a long time ago. I've done no surgery for about 10 years. I want to start getting back into it with phaco. My hands are steady, but I really am reluctant to do real patient surgery. Well, you got to just jump in. Find a colleague in the community who is established and ask, can you do part of their case? Back into it. Or if you sign up a patient, maybe enlist the help of a colleague in the community who can be there for you during the surgery, who can help you. So having someone in the operating room is obviously better than having no one. But I think, you know what, you've got the skills. If you put that question out there, you're obviously driven enough to make it happen. So I'd say, you know what, make it happen. So, all right, let's go through that. What do we got to have? Complicated surgery, refractive questions, surgery operating room, future AI robotics. We did the philosophical way. Let's do that. Let's do future AI robotics. So how will AI and maybe imaging influence the ophthalmic exam? How will AI and robotics influence surgery? Will there be autonomous robotic surgery in the future? Well, no one, me included, can predict the future. That's reality. But I'm working with a company now. As you know, my disclosure is I have AI projects now with advanced Euclidean solutions. My good buddy, Dr. John Lattice, we are innovating artificial intelligence for doing various aspects of ophthalmology, such as lens calculations. You've seen our website, iwellcalc.com. If you go to the Cataract Coach website and search for the keyword patent, you can, P-A-T-E-N-T, you can see our USA and international patents for AI with lens calculations. Those are on the website. That for sure has transformed it, and it will absolutely in the future. Let me tell you, in the future, you will not have a situation where you do a lens calc and it puts out 6 or 8 different formulas and different calculations, and you choose one calculation. Oh, I like this formula, I like that formula. That makes no sense. It's going to be one, and that's coming way sooner than you think. And the robots. My disclosure there is I do have a relationship with Horizon Surgical Systems, where I'm their chief advisor for these things, such as the medical aspects of it. Robotic cataract surgery is for sure coming, 100%. It's the same way that excimer lasers and femtosecond lasers took over cataract surgery. Do you ever want to go back to the day for cataract surgery of doing radial keratotomy with your hands? No, it's just not accurate. It's not, yes, some patients got reasonable results for a good amount of time. Okay. But is it better than doing LASIK or SMILE or PRK or any kind of lenticular surgery? No, no way. It's so much better. The same thing is going to apply to intraocular surgery like cataract surgery. When I fly in a plane, I want a pilot. I want a human pilot who's really smart, by the way. I don't care about other criteria other than, are you really good? Did you score at least 99% on all your exams? Then you're the pilot for me. Whatever you want to be, I don't care. Are you smart? Are you competent? Are you like the best of the best? I want you. And we should be that way for surgery too. So when it comes to this, when I have a pilot, I want the pilot to be there, but I also want the pilot to have the benefit of the autopilot system. I want the pilot to have the GPS and the satellite tracking and the radar systems. Of course, and the navigation, of course. I want you to have all those things. So same with intraoperative surgery, like cataract surgery. I want an incredibly talented surgeon, but I also want you to have all the benefit of the newest technologies to make my surgery safer and more precise and more efficient. And it's going to come for sure in ophthalmology. So don't be afraid of it. Don't worry, it's coming. For the future, what's the future of private practice versus academics versus private equity versus whatever? Another great question. This is a topic we've covered so many times on our Cataract Coach podcast. And there are a couple of fantastic episodes, one recently with Dr. Biren Meghpara out of Wills Eye Institute in Philadelphia. We talked about this extensively. Great episode. You need to not require so much spoon feeding. Step up, listen to the podcast. I've already given you the answers. So by you asking it here tells me like, okay, you haven't put the effort in to actually listen to the podcast. And that's unfortunate. Because in the future, one day you will say, oh my God, I struggled for years. I should have listened to that podcast. It was all there. Told you so. All right. Let's get to some more of these questions here. So we kind of talk about the future stuff. Okay, personal. Let's do personal. All right. Tell us about your recording system. Well, right now, I'm just recording this video on an iPhone. I got a Bluetooth mic sitting right here under my shirt to give good audio. I usually record in the operating room through a beam splitter and a camera. Now, in our surgery center, we did buy these very fancy microscopes from a company that I won't mention, who promised us high-def cameras, and the dumb scopes came with 720p cameras. Like, seriously? On what planet is 720p high def? It's not. You can't buy a 720p TV. There's no programming from Amazon or Netflix or HBO or whatever in 720p. It's too low resolution. It's a quarter of the resolution of actual HD, which is 1080p. So it's like, I felt like I just got scammed on that. So even though we spent all that money for those fancy microscopes, I got to use a beam splitter. I use either a Sony or a Panasonic camera that actually records in 1080p, which is 1920 pixels by 1080 pixels. And that's what I used when I showed you a video of me operating. So that's my recording system. If people are sending in videos, by the way, if you go to cataractcoach.com and send your video to me and I'll look at your video, don't submit low def video. Don't submit out of focus videos. Don't submit 720p videos. Just don't. Because if I make the video Cataract Coach today, today's video is a low def video that's out of focus and not centered, you will not watch it. And I've tried before and the viewership drops dramatically. So don't send me that junk video. And we do get, again, 50 to 60 videos sent into us a week. So you gotta make it good. All right, next question. How hard is it to make so many videos? And what's the growth of Cataract Coach? Well, you tell me. You sit there with your laptop or your desktop and get your memory stick of your raw video. Get that video, make a title slide. Like put the title on there and put the this and make a still shot. Okay. Now get your video, edit the raw video file. Now do a voiceover. Put some text on screen, render the video, now upload the video, write the description, optimize it with keywords, and You tell me, how long does it take? That's for one video. I've done 2,672 videos in a row, and I never missed a day. And so, it's a ton of work. I promise you, it's so, so much work. So why do I do it? Because I'm on a mission. I'm going to change ophthalmic education worldwide. The companies who make the print journals that come on my desk every month, thank you, but I don't read them. Even the Academy and the ASCRS, thank you for putting on educational meetings, but if I really want to learn, I'll learn online. I'll learn on my phone. It's just so much easier. I can stream a high-def video anywhere on the planet, and I can choose the ones just I want to hear. So that's the future of this. All right. What's the growth? The growth is unbelievable. I've had month after month growing. It's not stopped in 7 to 8 years. Every month is better than the previous month. We're currently at 2.5 million views per month for all platforms combined. YouTube is still our number one platform with the views. But I tell you, Instagram is darn close. And if I was going to bet, I'd say within a year or so, maybe 2 years, Instagram views per day will take over Cataract Coach YouTube videos. Yeah. Because the young docs, they love their Insta. Now, there's a challenge, though. I put the same video on all platforms. Every day at 2 a.m. LA time, Los Angeles time, we have the video on cataractcoach.com, on YouTube, on Instagram, on Facebook, on LinkedIn. It all goes out live so the world can see it. Instagram, I have to get to the good part within 3 seconds. Otherwise, the viewers swipe. Gone to the next one. Gone. They're gone. YouTube, I got 30 seconds. And if I send you an email for the Cataract website, I probably got a minute. So there are different metrics here, and I study it very carefully. I'm a math geek. I'm a data geek. I need to figure out what's going on. So that's why there are slightly different videos on Instagram versus Cataract Coach on YouTube. It's the same video. It's just kind of forwarded to a different point in the video for Instagram so that I can catch the viewers. And the views are, again, stupendous. If I show you the numbers, you'll be blown away. A video I put up, I get 20,000 Instagram views in a day. So the crazy part in ophthalmology now is I can put up a video on all my sites, all my platforms, and I can get 40, 50,000 ophthalmologists seeing that video within a day or two. That's an unbelievable number, but that's how we are now. What about retina rounds? I'm glad you asked. I love retina rounds. You know, one time, many years ago, 25 years ago, I thought I'd go into retina. Obviously, I didn't do that. But retina's always been such an amazing field. And there's so much to be learned from retina. And so my good friend, Dr. Pradeep Prasad, has started RetinaRounds.com. The podcasts there with Dr. Steve Schwartz are amazing. The educational videos on the retina side are so good. And they even cover the basic topics that we all need to know. Ultrasound of the eye. The basics of a retinal detachment, how do you detect a detachment? Or the recent video where I was the patient for a scleral depressed exam of the retinal periphery. Why do you do it? Well, here are the answers. So you definitely got to check it out. What's the benefit of your podcast? Well, you're listening to the podcast right now. The Cataract Coach podcast, sole purpose, to teach you the secrets of success in ophthalmology and to show you by example, by talking to well-known or even random ophthalmologists. What is your career path and what made you successful? In fact, if you are listening to this and you want to be in the Cataract Coach podcast, could you just please email me, devgan@gmail.com, and I'll put you right, I'm happy to do it. I want to hear what you have to say. We can all learn together. And then the question is, can you invite this and that and the other guest to Cataract Coach? I've invited everyone. Someone asked me specifically, can you please invite Ike Ahmed? I love Ike. He's a brilliant doctor, a great surgeon. So much to learn from him. It's not a joke when I say I've invited him on the podcast no less than 10 times, by email, by text message, by phone call, and in person. He's just too busy to do it. I don't know. anytime he wants to do it, I'm happy to do a Paddle Coach podcast with Ike Ahmed. He's a brilliant guy. But if he's too busy, he's too busy. What can you do? Should we do more personal stuff? Let's skip. I'm going to come back to the personal stuff. Let's go to the other things now. People have asked about questions about surgery in the operating room. Alrighty. Perioperative anesthesia. What do you use for sedation? How do you handle nervous or claustrophobic patients? Well, my normal patients get, not from me, but from an anesthesiologist, 1 or 2 milligrams of Versed, which is midazolam. They could get 25 micrograms of fentanyl also if they need it. And then I numb the eye with just tetracaine eye drops, nothing more. At the beginning of the case, if you see my videos, I put some intracameral preservative-free lidocaine, and that helps too. And that's all I do. Now, if you're going to do a prolonged case of an hour and a big reconstruction and suturing the iris, you're going to do MSICS with a big scleral incision, you need more anesthesia. If you're going to make a scleral incision, at a minimum, you need subconjunctival anesthetic for local anesthesia. But honestly, you'd probably be better off with a peribulbar or retrobulbar anesthetic too. So it says, I use a subtenous block, but when I try topical, I struggle to drape effectively. Can you give some tips? You may want some IV sedation. So a subtenous block is not going to have much effect on the eyelids, right? You got to either get the patient a little bit systemically sedated with a benzodiazepine like Versed or midazolam, or maybe even do like a NADBATH block of the facial nerve if you want to stop the eyelids. Again, I think that's a little bit overkill, but as you wish. And then next question, using an air pump, does that help with phaco machine fluidics? Well, think about this. Number one, I have a 10-part series about phaco fluidics on cataractcoach.com. Have you not watched it? Why do you do yourself the disservice of struggling without actually learning what the settings mean? If you're using an older phaco machine with a long IV pole that goes up and down, that's gravity-based infusion. The higher the pole, the more gravity, therefore the more infusion pressure. More modern machines don't have that. They have, if you look at some of them, a pressure plate with a BSS bag instead of a bottle. And so the pressure plate can push pressure on that. So you can have forced infusion. The idea of an air pump, and some machines have a gravity based with an extra line going in there as an air pump, just to have increased pressure. If you pressurize the bottle more, now you have a pressurized infusion. So again, it's all about the balance of inflow fluid versus the outflow fluid. That's the key to think about. The inflow, there's one source, your BSS bag or BSS bottle. Whether or not it's just gravity-based or you're pushing extra pressure to get it inside the eye, that's the only infusion. The outflow fluid is the aspiration from the tip, which you actively suck out of the eye. It's the leakage from the incision because we want a slightly leaky incision to avoid fake wound burn. And then finally, it's also leakage from the other incision, your side port. So you got to take all these into account to make sure that you have it fluidically balanced. Again, go to cataractcoach.com and just look at the phaco fluidics, phaco fundamentals section. It's a 10-part series. It'll make you a better doctor. I can't spoon feed it to you any other way. You've got to like put some effort in. Do I like automatic irrigation, continuous irrigation without having to put the pedal in position one? No, I do not. I like to be in full control. So if I take my foot off the pedal, I want it in position zero. I don't want it always on irrigation, continuous irrigation. But that's me. You do you. But then again, I like to drive cars that are stick shift transmission, manual transmissions with the three pedals. That's what I like. I like to be in control. Can you show phaco chop categorized by phaco machine? What are the settings for all the different phaco machines, including new machines and old machines? People, come on already. You're asking me, teach me how to set the seats and the mirror in this car versus that car versus the other car. No. Why not just understand what the settings mean? Why not understand Poiseuille's equation? Why not understand what does inflow versus outflow balance mean? Why not understand phaco power modulations? What's burst mode, pulse mode, duty cycle? Understand that. Then you can use any machine. So that's the better way of doing it. What's my favorite FACO machine? It's like asking, what's your favorite car? They're all pretty good. If I give you a BMW, a Mercedes, and an Audi, guess what? There's no bad car. They're all really good. They're a little different in the way they drive or the way they feel, but they're all dang good. I tell you that right now. So there's no terrible FACO machine, and there's no absolutely amazing FACO machine. They're all pretty good. They're just a little bit different. Test drive them all, and you tell me. Why do you not use intracranial antibiotics in your videos? In the rest of the world, it's standard of care. I do. I use, on essentially all eyes, at the end of the case, preserve-free moxifloxacin in the anterior chamber at the end of the case. Sometimes videos, when you put on CataCulture, are edited to show you the pertinent parts of the video. After the incisions are sealed, do you need to watch me at the very end injecting the antibiotics inside the anterior chamber? No. I already know what my decay rate is. When I watch a YouTube video, I analyze them. What percent of people watch till the very last minute? Small number. So I already know. So sometimes I'll edit the video and not show that because you want to get right to the good parts. Of course we use intracranial antibiotics because I would want it for my own eye. In any surgery I do, I give the same treatment, the same high level of care that I want for my own eyes. I use a diamond blade. Why do you use a diamond keratome? It's better. If it's my eye, don't use a femtosecond laser to make the incision. Please do not. That's terrible. Use a diamond and make a beautiful incision and do it right. And so what I want for my eyes, I give to 100% of my patients. Capsule polishing. Do you do capsule polishing? Of course. I like to do it. Is it necessary? I'm not sure. Studies have shown one way or the other. Maybe capsule polishing helps. Maybe it doesn't. Do you need to do it? I do it to look pretty on the undersurface of the anterior capsule rim. Now, in the posterior capsule, you can polish to a small degree, but you got to be a little bit careful here. If it's my eye, if it's your eye, do you mind to really, really thoroughly polish the capsule with an increased risk of capsule rupture? Or leave the capsule at really good, but maybe not stress it out and have a 1 in 1,000 risk of capsule rupture? What do you want? Yeah, me too. Don't break my bag. Don't break my bag. It's okay. I understand. I don't mind a YAG laser in the future for the capsulotomy. All right. Challenging cases, get them every week. How do I manage them? Well, come on, the videos are on Cataract Coach. We talked about that. Let's go to refractive questions. All right. What brand of monofocal eye well do you like the best? Again, the example of the Audi, the Mercedes, and the BMW. They're all fantastic. They're all slightly different. What's your preference? You tell me. So I currently do not work for any of these companies. I don't work for J&J or B&L or Alcon. I have all the lenses in my operating room. We can use all of them. They're all pretty good. So again, you do your own homework. Do your own math. Don't make me do your math for you. Go-to multifocal. What is your go-to multifocal? Tell me about that. Well, I think there are a number of good multifocal lenses available in the market. If the patient is willing to accept the compromises. Now, I'll tell you right now, straight up. I don't want a multifocal lens in my eye. I just don't. Because I cannot live with the compromise of it. Now, I have so many patients with a multifocal lens, we're so happy. And they say, oh my gosh, it's the best thing. But they started off with terrible cataracts and they started off as a +2 eye probe. They couldn't see anything anyway. And when you give them this full range of vision, so what, there's some nighttime glare and halo, so what, there's less contrast, so what, the amount of photon energy coming in the eyes split up, and okay, they don't care. They're happy. But again, a guy like me, it was a -2 spherical in both eyes. I just love being -2. As you can see, I go around doing everything without glasses. I love it. You couldn't pay me enough to be something other than -2. So I love what I have. So again, I have my own biases here. But any of the multifocals are fine. I won't choose one over the other. You do the math. You tell me. Lens calculations. I have complex cases. I have a patient with prior Barrett care. keratomyelitis, and I have a patient with the keratoconus, and I have a patient, a lot of questions about that. Myopia is a gift. Look at the central 3 millimeters of the cornea on your topography, tomography, whatever device you have. In the central 3 millimeters, what's the lowest K value? That lowest K value is what you should use for the lens calculations, because that'll help you choose a slightly higher IOL power. And therefore, any error on the post-op outcome is going to be erring on the side of a little myopia. So if you aim for plain and the patient ends up -1, pretty good. If they end up -2, well, hey, they're lucky like me. That's the smart move. Myopia is not a bad thing. It's a really good thing, especially in our modern world where we spend the entire day on our mobile phones. And so let's see what the next question is. That's the refractive ones. Complications. Have you ever had a tough couple of cases in a row that drastically changed your confidence level? If so, how do you get out of that slump? Well, my fellow surgeons, let me tell you, 100% of us have complications. If you do surgery and you're honest, you will easily admit you have complications during cataract surgery. That's just the way life is. That's the nature of life. Every patient wants a perfect outcome. I understand that. So do I. But the reality is we can't always deliver that. And the outcome of your surgery is not just surgical technique and technologies in the surgeon's hands. It's also the patient tissue and protoplasm and anatomy and patient healing. And you can't always control that. And so sometimes you just got to give the best you can and go from there. So you have to be able to get back on the horse. You fall off the horse, it's okay, you dust yourself off. You say, what did I learn from that? And you got to continue. The difference between a mistake and a lesson is you learn from the lesson. So when you have a complication in the operating room, let it be a lesson. What can you learn from this? Another question here. What mental framework do you use to stay calm and methodical when you have a complication of surgery? This is a brilliant question. Brilliant. And here's the answer. And I didn't think of this myself, so I can't take credit. You're operating is a complication. Iris prolapse, capsule rupture, whatever it is. You stabilize the situation, right? Capsule ruptures, you put in viscoelastic to the side port, stabilize the eye, don't let the AC collapse. Okay, now everything's stabilized. You can stop, you can think for a second. Imagine that now the patient in front of you was referred to you to fix this complication. It's not you hardly trying to fix something. You dropped the ball, you had a complication, you had a mistake, you gotta fix it quickly and move on. No. This patient in front of you is sitting here with an open capsule, a little bit of vitreous prolapse, some cortex still in the bag, and aphakic. How will you fix this now? Imagine that the complication didn't happen in your hands or your operating room. Imagine the patient was sent to you right now. Now what would you do? You would look at it differently. You'd say, all right, let's take this one step at a time. Let's stabilize things. Let's prevent more vitreous prolapse. Let's take out the cortex. Let's do a little bit of an anti-vitrectomy. Let's check to make sure there's no vitreous prolapse anymore. Put some triamcinolone in the eye. Let's get a sulcus lens in. Let's get that optic capture behind the rexus. Let's clear the anterior chamber. Let's put a suture in for good measure. Post-op, let's give the patient a little bit of extra intracameral antibiotics, maybe a little bit more steroids. Let's give this patient some Diamox in the post-op's area just to keep the pressure low. This is what you do. And the patients will do fine, I promise you. Alrighty. Patient with unplanned vitreous loss. We talked about that. We talked about that already. Patient moves inadvertently during surgery. How do you do that? Well, you deal with the situation you have. Remember, there is no medical legal liability in having a ruptured posterior capsule. It's a known complication. 100% of surgeons have it. The rate among residents, good residents, is a 6% posterior capsule breakage rate. among struggling residents, maybe 10%. In the community, in practice, in our surgery center, where we have so many operating surgeons, many, many surgeons, the range could be less than 1 in 1,000 cases of ruptured capsule. 2, 4, 5, 6%. And that just varies from surgeon to surgeon. I mean, we don't want to admit it in ophthalmology, but there's a bell curve of surgical skill. It really is. In fact, that's why the robot is going to be so welcomed. Because the robot will allow you to be a better version of you. The robot will make the rest of us as good in the operating room as the best of us. Imagine this, you're operating, and the robot, which has not only these 4K cameras, but also real-time OCT, all data integrated, AI going in there, and you're operating, you're driving the robot, and the robot says, okay, it'll always keep a safe zone of 50 microns between your instrument and the posterior capsule, no matter what. Your reaction time is 200 milliseconds. What if the robot's reaction time is 5 milliseconds? It's so much faster, it's 40 times faster. So it's like, it's going to be neat things. Good things are coming, hang in there. But again, complications happen to every surgeon, including me, including you. That's kind of it for that. We're running long here. Let's talk about the last few questions. Personal questions, all righty. Someone said, I love the healing aspect of what we do. But I'm graying out in private practice. I'm feeling the wear of age and the relentless friction of the business side of medicine. What inspires you to do all that you do? And what would you tell future physicians? It's a great question. You gotta find your own passion. You gotta find what makes you happy. We're so fortunate to be ophthalmologists. I'm thankful every day to be an ophthalmologist. You have the best magic trick in all of medicine. We can literally make blind people see. It's so incredible. In a surgery that we actually enjoy doing. I love to do cataract surgery. So how blessed are we? But there are certainly challenges. The business part of medicine is just not easy. It's just not the same anymore. What do you do? I don't know what the answer is to that. But I know one thing for sure. The rest of our lives, absolutely patients will need cataract surgery or other ophthalmic surgeries. And there's no one better than us to deliver that. We're the world's experts in ocular surgery, and we can deliver that care. And so that gratifying part, especially when patients are sweet and thankful, means the world, right? It means the world to me. Someone said, how do I combat aging? Do I do Botox or fillers or anything else? Well, first look at my face. Remember, I've got sisters who are in plastic surgery. My older sister sees this ring on my forehead right here, and she says, you need Botox right there. But I haven't done it, and I don't want to do it, and I don't want to do fillers, and no, I'm not dyeing my hair. I just kind of accept life for what it is. And I'm kind of proud to show these signs of wear. It makes me very happy. I mean, if you look at a silverback gorilla in the wild, and silverback basically just means gray hair, they don't want to dye their hair. That's a sign of pride. That's a sign of accomplishment. So all the gray hair right here, in my beard too, I want to keep it. I like it. All righty. Congratulations on your 225 times 10 bench press. Do you have an ultimate one rep maximum goal in mind? So, yes, in fact, I promise, and I can happily do it for you in person. In fact, I did it with fellow ophthalmologists in Thailand. They were blown away that I could bench press there more than 100 kilos, 105, 110 kilos, 10 times. So 225 pounds is about 100 kilos. And for bench press, yes, you can see I'm pretty good at that. I can put that up 10 times for a set. I can do 6 sets of 10 reps of 225, so I can do a lot of it. It's not a macho thing. As far as ophthalmologists are concerned, I'm actually not as strong as like someone like Johnny Gayton. Johnny Gayton, who was on the Cataract Coach podcast, G-A-Y-T-O-N is the last name, an amazing ophthalmologist who's taught me so much Gosh, I love him so much. He is a legitimate, world-class power lifter. He holds records. If you Google Johnny Gayton powerlifting records, you can see his official results from powerlifting content. At 10 years older than me, he bench pressed double what I do. He's unbelievable. I don't want to do that. So I actually almost never bench more than two plates, we call 225 or 100 kilos, because I'm a little bit afraid after the age of 50 of having a shoulder injury. I have beautifully healthy, great shoulders, no rotator cuff injuries, nothing. It feels great. And I don't want to have that injury. So while in the past I've done 275, and last time I tried, I put that up seven times. What's my one rep max? I have no idea. Maybe I could do three plates, but I bet you I could damage my shoulders too, and I kind of don't want to try. So if, when I was younger, I'd be more into that. And by the way, I've been lifting weights since I was 17 years old. So this is not like some overnight thing. I've just been doing it a long time. And yes, my problem is I bench two plates, but then I also enjoy eating two plates. And that's why I'm a little too chunky right now. You travel a lot to other countries. How do you fit that in with your clinical schedule? It is not easy. I travel a lot. Last year, 2024, I lectured in 21 countries in a year. This year, I'd be pretty close to that same number. I took off all of July this year. And July, I went and I lectured in, oh my God, I had such a great time, Manila, the Philippines. I had a fantastic time there. That was for a weekend. And then I did the following weekend, actually, Amar Agarwal's meeting in Chennai, India. Fantastic time. The next meeting, the Royal College of Ophthalmology of Thailand meeting in Bangkok. Beautiful. Then the next weekend I did my friend, Dr. Naren Shetty's meeting in Bangalore, India, his master's voice. What a fantastic meeting. Then I went to Singapore and then finally flew Singapore to LA, came home. So I was gone for about a month, maybe a little more than a month. And it's a big sacrifice. I'm fortunate that I work for myself. I don't have a boss. I don't have a schedule. I can do kind of whatever I want. But it's a bit of a compromise to be able to travel so much. But again, remember the saying, right? Every person has two lives. The second life starts the day you realize that you have just one life. And I'm very cognizant that I have just one life. The story I told you earlier about how my dad had one regret in his life, I don't want to have that regret. So I'm here to really maximize my enjoyment in traveling. And then I'm getting tired here. It's getting late. And it was to the one last question. The very last question, which is a good one. I've saved it for last. Cataract coach, your life seems so good. And I envy your situation. What is life really like? Well, the truth is, for me, for you, for everyone, life is a zero-sum game. Meaning, the amazing positives of my life, I promise you, are canceled out by negatives. But that's true for everyone. No one has a perfect life. My life is sometimes so crazy, but it's a craziness that I can handle. And I couldn't imagine being in anyone else's shoes. You know, back when I was a resident, oh my gosh, more than 25 years ago, there was a retina attending at UCLA. It was amazing. His name was Mark Yoshizumi. Oh my God, I loved him. Now, he taught me so much. He really did. It was not about ophthalmology. It wasn't about retina. He told me about life. And I will never forget, we're one day waiting in the operating room, some after hours case. He's got some detachment he's got to fix. And we're sitting in the waiting area, waiting for the anesthesiologist to get the patient ready. And there's one of those, you know, magazines there. And it had a picture of JFK Jr., John F. Kennedy Jr. on the cover. And here's this like ultra handsome guy who's basically like America's royal family. He's super rich, super successful. He's super famous. I mean, his life is like, ugh. And I said to Dr. Yoshizumi, I said, you know, wow, what a life to be him. Can you imagine? Here, I'm just some poor schmo. I mean, I'm driving an 18-year-old car that's broken down. I'm living in this tiny apartment. I'm barely making ends meet. I'm working so hard as a resident, just trying to get ahead. And I'd love to have his life. And Dr. Yoshizumi says to me, nah, don't ever think that. Don't ever think that you want someone else's life. You have your life, which you can handle. And you can evolve your life into what you want it to be. So you don't have to worry about the grass always greener elsewhere. Or keeping up with the Joneses, as our American saying. Don't wish for his life, because you never know. Lo and behold, I don't know, it was a few weeks or a few months later, JFK Jr. dies in an airplane crash. And I go to Dr. Yoshizumi and I said, oh my goodness, you were so right. I can't even believe it. And from that moment on, I realized I've just got to enjoy and embrace my own life, whatever struggles I have. And I promise you, it's not perfect. There's so many parts of my life that are such a grind, such grief. Everything that you see as an incredible positive in my life, I promise you, is balanced out by equal negatives. It is absolutely a zero sum. I'm at zero. The pluses and the minuses have equaled out. I'm at zero. And I just thought, wow, Dr. Yoshizumi, what an incredible bit of advice you've given me. I will always take that to heart. And that's helped me just kind of roll with it and get through life. So I hope you enjoyed. This is a long session. I don't even know how much time it's taken. A lot of talking here. I definitely need a sip of my water here. That's much better. But that was a fun Ask Me Anything session. Again, if you'd like to be on the Catter Coach podcast, if you have something fun to say, if you're an ophthalmologist, just send me an email. devgan@gmail.com or cattercoach.com. You can hit the link to contact me. I'd love to feature on here. We'll have a great time talking. We'll all learn together. And I promise you, as my kids would tell me, Dad, you're not that special. But I will do one thing. And that is, I will equalize surgical education worldwide. And as long as I live, there will never be a secret in ophthalmic surgical technique. I will teach you everything. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, good night.